Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. Join us as we chat in a mellow mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
We are here, full panel tonight, again. Sean is here.
Hello.
Ashok is here.
Hello, greetings.
Zach is here.
Yellow.
And Bailey is here, but she will join us in just a moment.
It's a full crew, extended.
Extended yes. crew,
full,
yeah.
Full plus one.
Fullest crew.
Right. Yeah. All we need is... MVP.
Is this the most people we've had on the show?
This is... Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And as always, I'm your host, Alex Trebek. So Sean's going to read...
Let's get the topic in, I would say.
Okay,
so our thoughts tonight...
amateur.
We've hit this before, and basically the main topic we have today is the internet and the pros, the cons, the nature... basically its role in the modern day and its thing about it. But before we get into Creaturum Sanctum, Sean has something to say about the pros and cons of the web. So let's hear it.
Yeah, so I'm doing the introduction tonight, and I will admit firsthand that I don't own a cell phone and have no plans to buy one, unlike other members of the panel here. Right? As I speak, Zach is on his phone. So one might think this makes me a Luddite of the first order. By extension, one might include I find little of value on the web and numerous outlets of social media. But one would surmise wrongly. Social media has a number of flaws. Various sites administrators of social media have shown utter disregard for people's privacy by the free handling of sharing of personal information. It has also belittled the term friend by allowing us to make friends with complete strangers with the click of a button instead of developing friendships over many years. One might observe how social media has transformed many into incredible egoists on top of that. Many teachers might agree also that the web has led to the general shrinking of true thinking among students. The web all too often reduces complex situations to a simplistic paragraph, mistakes opinions for analysis, and spreads false news and hate mongering. Educationally, it has led to many students losing the ability to carry a thesis through more than a few pages. One student even told me that Thomas Paine's Common Sense bewildered her, a work by Paine who wrote it with a specific intention of making his points comprehensible to any literate person in the original 13 colonies. So one could easily reach the conclusion that the worldwide spread of the web and especially social media has brought about a worldwide shrinking of the human mind. But one should not jump to conclusions. Tonight, we'll talk about the pros and cons of the web, going through them partly categorically, but in our own free fashion, as always.
All right. So that was awesome, by the way.
Yeah, that was great.
As always, Creaturum Sanctum.
As always.
Our thoughts tonight.
We are back. That was Creaturum Sanctum.
All right.
And so we're going to do a little format for this conversation, and Sean will lead us into that.
Okay, so I actually had a conversation with Steve Haycox, a professor of history over at UAA, and we talked about the pros and cons of the net, and generally among the intellectual elite, they mostly point out the cons, but Stephen and I also wanted to talk about the pros. And so we're going to go through a number of pros and discuss them as a group.
Right.
So I'll present 1, 2, 3, 4. So first, all right, social media. It allows us to keep easily in touch with family and friends, both near and far. We can readily share notes, photos, videos, and even links with each other. Is that a pro, do you think?
So hold on. Can you repeat the things that we're sharing?
Sure. The first one is social media.
Yeah.
All right. Social media as a whole can be considered a pro on the web.
And they share links.
Yeah, keeping in touch with family. I mean, for me personally, I will admit, even though I don't own a cell phone, I'm actually on Facebook because I'm here in Anchorage, Alaska. but almost all my immediate family and cousins are actually not my immediate family, but most of my first cousins and friends are back in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So when I post photos of hiking and climbing there in Alaska, it's a way to keep in touch with them.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, our opinions about it.
Yeah.
I would. I mean, like, I mean, yeah. I mean, you touched on this later on in the thing, in the letter that you read, but like, I don't think it's like one of the most con parts of the internet, in my opinion. And I don't mean like, I don't like, that's kind of a generic answer that everybody has, but like, it's, you know, it's I don't want to say dehumanizing, but it does have dehumanization within it. And it's like, you know, because it's also detrimental in the fact that it's, you know, for people who don't have social media, they kind of suffer in a world that's getting more and more connected with social media. So it's, I think it's con in much different ways as well.
Do you mean like we make friends of total strangers?
Yeah, no, I remember like back in like high school or middle school, like, and it's kind of a personal example, like I don't really have social media, and that kind of was bad because that was much harder to make friends if you don't have social media.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, that's probably one of the worst parts about the internet. I mean, the connection is good, and that's probably the best, like, that's probably the,
or you know, have social media and people don't pay attention to you on social media.
Yeah, yeah. Which in theory doesn't really mean anything, but we give it so much value, it does, mm-hmm, you know, to us apparently give value. You know,
I think that on some level, like, that aspect of it is good if you want to keep in touch and if you can restrain yourself and not go on, you know, in an addictive manner.
Yeah.
But then again, on the other side, I think it kind of takes away from the bittersweetness of homesickness, for instance.
Yeah.
Because you don't necessarily have to go there, and like, you see the people that, you know, were in your past every day on your Facebook feed. So you don't get a chance to miss them on some level, which is, I think, a very human experience.
Yeah.
But then again, if you are never able to go back, like a good example is like Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
Nobody Perfect really knows example. Where he is. They're assuming Russia, I think. But yeah, I think he can still connect with the American people via Twitter.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole... Well, it can go both ways with the whole homesickness part. Like, you can see like your people like you talked to like years ago, and you know, you'd be like, oh, you know, I'm still in touch, kind of, not really, right? But it can also just, you know, put into effect more homesickness, you know, because maybe like you won't remember them on, you know, if you didn't have social media, and then you look on your feed, or what is he doing these days? Oh, yeah. I'm sad now. You know,
let me compare it both ways. Let me compare myself to like what I'm doing with my life opposed to like
somebody that's else's.
Or you can use social media like Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram or et cetera, just to distract yourself, you know, from whatever currently is going on in your life, whether it be good or not. As what Sean said, though, the pro is if you're not from, like, if you're in a different place from your hometown and you can reach out to family, like, yeah, it's beneficial. Yeah. I have Facebook Messenger. I used to have everything, like Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, all the things. But it became, like, mind-numbing to me. I'd find myself on there for no reason whatsoever, just except for scrolling endlessly.
Yeah.
When I'm like, I could inform myself and do something more productive with my life, like play guitar, or, you know, or hang out with my kid.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know. That's what I did in like high school. Is like everybody would like, you know, scour through their stuff, and I would just be on Wikipedia.
And then then I would always get like fake friend requests from people, and that's how you get hacked, man. That's how you get your credit cards jacked. Which has happened to me multiple times too.
Okay. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. It has,
that's the only pro. I
it has see. Both pluses and minuses.
Than pluses.
Yeah, well, it depends on the individual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a cousin Elizabeth who's got leukemia, and so she's wheelchair ridden, and the only real way I can contact or keep in touch with her is just me sending her pictures, and I know she looks at them every time I post a picture of Alaska. But on the other hand, there are people who are actually totally obsessed with how many likes they get for every post they make.
Yeah.
And they either go into like states of incredible depression.
It sends dopamine to your brain like immediately.
Yeah, I don't, well.
As soon as you hear that notification, it doesn't even matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's social media it is. It's like as soon as you hear that ding, it's just like, whoop.
Does it make a noise? I never heard a noise on my computer.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Theoretically, I think. If you're on Messenger, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be that I think maybe like a notification might have made a noise.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have social media.
I know. Me neither. I did. No, I don't.
Okay. Yeah, the only one I have is Facebook.
Yeah. But that's for a good reason, though.
I like to think so.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a fine line.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably just depends on how much you really delve into social media. Like, not to get too personal, but like ever since my parents have been like somewhat getting on social media, it's actually been pretty good. Like
your parents have been getting
like
on social
very
media?
Lightly just Facebook, right? Like that's actually and it's actually
that's
been,
interesting.
It's been good. They're connected with old friends and whatnot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But like the further you delve into it, and this mostly goes with like, you know, people who pretty much grew up
that
with social
is so
media.
Unexpected of your parents.
It was kind of, you know, kind of a surprise.
Not in
move.
A bad way, but like your parents just don't seem like the
it was out of nowhere
type.
In a sense. But it was good. But they're not like delving just like really deep into it, right? And in a certain sense, the whole stereotype of like, oh, you know,
microdosing
you know,
in Facebook.
You know, parents using Facebook, that whole like stereotype or whatever, it's actually kind of a good thing compared to like because they don't really get the cons that we do, I feel like.
Yeah. You get like peace of mind, you're like, oh, it's quiet in here.
Yeah, because for that point it's primarily communication.
Yeah.
If you're using it lightly. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of other people it's like you know, I think we're gonna go into like the egoism that comes with it. And you know, you mentioned the whole dopamine, you know, it's just like it's just exciting and it's just like a whole new experience and it's just
I wanna welcome Bailey to the panel.
I just heard the magic words parents on social media. And I just had to share my story of my parents, which is that a random like woman commented on my dad's Facebook wall one time and my mom, thinking it was funny, was like, "Hey, should I be worried?"
Oh my gosh.
But it just didn't land well because it was social media and there are like old people.
Oh my god.
And so everyone just thought they were weird, I'm sure. I definitely did as their child. I was like, you poor souls.
So should we move on to the next con? Is it now?
Or you just basically did pros and cons for this.
I was supposed to be a pro, but I think we kind of...
Yeah, we can do both as each one passes, right? Okay, right? And this next one is actually ripe for both. Second, it can serve as a platform for political activism. For instance, well, there are pros and cons of this because it was used for Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
It was used for Arab Spring. It was also used for Obama's election. It was also used for Trump's election. Right?
And ISIS. I'm serious though.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, it's just neutral because if it's just a medium for people to use things, and that the actual fall in that lies in with the organization skills and the
and
actual
conspiracy
people.
Theories.
Yeah. Oh yeah, actually, that's
conspiracy
huge.
Theories though aren't real politics, but you can talk about hate groups that support political, right?
Well, the problem is it gets political with. How popular it gets sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not essentially political. But like, but it's mostly neutral in my opinion and that aspect of it. Because like, you can't really do it. I mean, that's going to exist without the internet. And it's kind of like, I was thinking like, you know, any other neutral medium, you know, it's not really going to happen.
If it wasn't on social media, it would be on a different form of the internet, like a website, for instance, or via email.
Or smoke signals.
Or
smoke signals, Pony Express.
Yeah, there's somehow it would get out. I mean, inevitably. I think it's actually the one thing you can't take away from it is that now it's not just the newspapers who can heavily influence; it's anybody that can get a following.
For what?
Calling it DIY journalism or something like that. Like it's do your own media to a certain extent. Like we create our own.
Yeah.
The basis of social media. Murat, you should talk about, at some point, it sounds like Ishik has something to say, but the server I've been creating because it's like on topic.
Well, so I'll mention that. Yeah, okay. I'll mention it right now. Actually, you should tell us about it.
It's called the Organizers Union.
The Organizers Union for... Intersectional Justice. It's a Discord group.
So what's intersectional justice, if I can ask for a definition?
It's intended to be a really broad umbrella of different levels of ways that people can be marginalized just through like their position in the world. So by calling the Organizers Union for Intersectional Justice and like all causes related to, I hope to encompass like issues of class, issues of like employment status and ability and gender and race and just the many different issues we see people being disproportionately treated because of. So I'm pretty excited about it, and it comes to mind when we talk about this topic.
And it wouldn't be possible without the net, would it?
Not at all.
Otherwise, people would be sending letters to each other.
Right. Or, like, to give you a sense of what it's supposed to be like, it's supposed to be kind of like an internet-based bulletin board. So my likening would be to, like, a bulletin board that we all, like, stopped off at to catch the latest news. But now, wherever you have internet access, you can read everything.
That's cool.
I will put a link for that at the bottom of the description of this podcast episode.
If it expires, just comment somewhere and I'll send you a new link.
All right. So,
political.
What about you, Zach? Did you?
What?
Did you share your opinion on that?
On activism and the political view of it?
Online.
Online? I don't know. I don't think it really makes a difference. They're just campaigning their campaign. You know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't on the internet, it'd probably be on your TV in between ads or in between shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or on some, it would find its way on some other platform. It's just
That depends on the country, though. It would be on TV. In oppressive,
yeah, that's
oppressive
true.
Regimes
then
wouldn't allow
the
that.
Then it'd be the newspaper, like Rod said. Yeah. It'd be on, or like a poster on a wall. Like, you'd find out somehow.
Well, then again, those regimes will have many websites blocked.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this actually segues into the third thing on this list, too.
I was going to quickly add a point. Is that connect, though? I was going to bring this quick point before we go into the third point. Sorry. I was going to say that the independent media thing, real quick. It's like, and, you know, we mentioned, like, if it wasn't for the internet, it would just be on TVs or whatever, right? So the whole, like, effects of the internet, and internet in regards to activism and whatnot, it decentralizes power, essentially. Mm-hmm. But in this process, it starts to centralize its own power around the actual internet, where you start to rely on it for the actual activism. So, like, activism existed before the internet. You take the internet away now, it's going to be, I would probably assume much harder than it was for people before the internet. So in a certain sense, it's not decentralizing power, but it's mostly taking the power for itself. Instead of an actual a group of people, it's more of the actual entity of the internet that's kind of taking it.
So think of Martin Luther King's march on the Capitol, right?
Yeah.
That call, that great movement, that, right? That was not activated by the net. Mm-hmm. That was activated by
word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Yeah.
Television.
That's awesome.
Right.
That's crazy.
Right. Yeah, the fact they got so many people there.
That's nuts.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Even, I mean, music, like concerts and stuff, it was all flyers under windshield wipers and word of mouth.
Right. Yeah.
Up until
are you going
like,
to the show tonight?
Ago,
what show?
Ago.
What are you talking about?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
They go.
Does anyone even, like, look at the posters or whatever at, like, restaurants and whatever? I do sometimes.
I do.
Like,
only place
it's
I
very
do
rare.
Is at, like, the music store. That's it.
Yeah. I sometimes look when I'm at, like, Cars or Fred Meyer's. I always, like, look at the poster board. I'm like, is someone missing? Or is there, like, oh, look, I can learn Chinese or guitar lessons, but I think I'm decent enough. I don't need that.
Cars bulletin boards are tops.
Yeah.
When I think bulletin boards, I think cars.
Yeah, because right when you walk in, it's just, like, bam, in your face. And you're like, oh, okay, well, I feel like I should look at this. All right.
Should we move on?
Well, we've already actually covered the third one, which is allows for political freedom under oppressive regimes. Like rather like an underground newspaper or a bulletin board.
Yeah.
Right?
We beat you to the punch.
Right? Yes, indeed. You beat me to it. Right.
Nice.
But that way it allows, you know, for the sharing of subversive ideas.
Yeah.
Right? Against any oppressive regime.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll move on to the fourth. It allows people to connect with like-minded people through various books, book clubs, chess clubs, hiking and biking groups, and even fellow conspiracy theory junkies.
Uh-huh. Bailey is in 5 book clubs online. She could probably shed some light on this.
There you go. Nice. Okay, great.
Can't shed any light. I'm just weak. I'm weak for social connection in books, okay?
I think it's good, though, especially now. Obviously, this is the typical conversation everyone's been having over the last year, is that people are finding communities online because, you know, COVID-19 at the time of this episode has definitely put a damper on everyone's social life.
Yeah, for sure. But at least all these things that people are joining groups in or joining in on are like positive things, like running groups or hiking groups or music groups or finding people to play music with or book clubs or so on, so forth, so on and so forth.
But like-minded people also brings up, you can also connect with other hate groups.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a con. Like conspiracy theories.
That's the thing, though. Like, it's the same thing with the political thing where it's like, it just accelerates what was kind of going to happen anyway. The only problem with like joining groups that you're already into is you kind of create your own echo bubble. And that's definitely been a topic that a lot of people have been discussing over the past few years with like echo bubbles within the internet. But like in a certain sense, like subjectively speaking, even if you're joining a hate group, at least for that person, it's positive. And I guess that's still kind of a pro, barely. But I think the real con is really creating that echo bubble where you join a hate group and you're not really getting, you know, adverse opinions. You're joining something that you like, but you're not really going to hear the other person's.
And when you're joining a social media group, like if it is like a conspiracy theory or a hate group or like a coup or whatever, it's weird from like an outside perspective because you see it start off like one person and yeah, it might be in your community and yeah, word to mouth could pass in your community, but on the internet, it varies. It could go anywhere and you could see how many people are actually involved or think the same way or have the same values or views as you. And it becomes like a huge collective.
Right.
And sometimes it's scary and sometimes it's positive, but it's really weird.
So I'll confess, I'm a card-carrying member of the Flat Earthers. how many fellow Flat Earthers are out there?
I was going to say, that was what I wanted to clarify, is that nowadays conspiracy theorists get a bad rap. And like yeah. I feel like back in like their glory days, there was nothing wrong with them, okay?
No.
And I love conspiracies. Like, they're so interesting.
So,
and then also I wanted to...
Well, that begs the question, do you take them seriously, though?
Well, nowadays...
Or is it just entertainment?
I don't know.
I actually have a theory on this that I found a chart. It's like an infographic on it's conspiracy theories.
Looks like an upside down food chart.
Some are more grounded in reality than others, and some were actually proven correct. So yeah. there is a degree of how realistic a conspiracy theory is. Like, at some point, it's just skepticism, and there's reason. Like, for instance, COINTELPRO, MK Ultra, those came true. Free Britney, this is the next, and that's called the speculation line. The next one is leaving reality. Free Britney, hashtag Free Britney, which is partially true. The JFK assassination, there's a lot of weird questions about that.
I'm surprised Operation North was not on there yet.
Epstein didn't kill himself. That's like on.
But you missed a very important grounded level conspiracy theory, which is NSA mass surveillance.
Oh yeah, the mass surveillance NSA. Amen. And then the next level becomes science denial, where you have like crop circles, Elvis is alive, Bigfoot, etc.
Tupac's alive.
And then the anti-Semitic point of no return, 5G conspiracy. COVID-19 made in a lab and anti-vaxxers. And then the final, detached from reality, QAnon, Deep State, the New World Order, Flat Earth, etc.
I can't believe Flat Earth's still up there.
Well, the whole thing is like, because we're getting into like these like really thick conspiracies, the whole idea of like the decent conspiracies are kind of getting trash and like, you know, as a side, like mass surveillance is like, it's very much true. But like, I don't know, like, I don't hear too much shit given to that, according to quote unquote conspiracy, but like all the good ones are kind of getting, you know,
bashed. You know, because
they're throwing the baby with the bathwater, you know?
Yeah. Especially Operation Northwood. Good conspiracy documentary. Like the George Harrison tapes. Remember that?
Which one is that?
Like the Paul is dead.
Yeah, all that.
And
yeah, that one's definitely detached from reality. But yeah, it's entertaining.
But when you like fact check some of these things, it's like, if you play this song on Beatles album number 3, it says Paul is dead. And you do it and it's on there.
But it's that's a confirmation bias. It's just something that sounds like what people thought it sounded like. So they were like, oh, that's what it says.
Yeah.
It's like if they thought
they made it factual.
It was going to say Paul is dead before they ever heard it.
Yeah.
And they heard it, then it's like, holy shit. It's
just
Paul's
weird,
dead.
Though. I'm not saying that it's like factual or anything, but I'm saying it's just very strange.
Well, that's on like a lot of songs. Like, I think Stairway to Heaven has like the whole like Satan is something on that song. Yeah, if you play it backwards or something, there's like Satan. I forget. I don't know. It's like some, you know.
Playing
that's
songs like a backwards. Songs,
that's the Tin Pan Alley song.
That
Satan is alive. And
I
accidentally found that.
Yeah.
I was sitting on the couch it's the Stevie Ray Vaughan song Tin Pan Alley. I was sitting on the couch next to the record player and just out of the blue decided to hit reverse.
Yep.
And then the first thing I heard was Satan is alive.
And we're like, "What?"
You know what's funny?
Totally
though?
Randomly.
Like because like you know I used to listen to black metal and shit. Like that's like so much like so less scary now. It's like, "Oh wow, they mentioned Satan, great." Like you know.
But it's how many Christians actually believe that Satan is a living, I don't know if living is the right word, but an actual entity?
All the Christians I know.
Like, do Christians actually believe in the existence of Satan?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Those that I know, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah.
It means there's 3 billion people on this earth that actually believe that's true, and we're wondering why we're so fucked.
Well, I mean, I would say American Christians. I mean, European Christians are a little bit less.
Good distinction.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, even with believing that, say,
in African Christians.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. I would say there are a lot more.
Nothing.
But like, I mean, you know, I'm not speaking for the Christian community, but at least as a Muslim community, it's like at least the progressive American Muslims. It's like a lot of them say they do believe in Satan, but they don't really believe in Satan, right? Like they don't really act like it, right? If they were to believe it. So like, you know, if so and so says they believe in Satan, it's like you know, I take a, you know, second glance or whatever. And they might not actually believe in Satan, they might not actually act according to that too. But
I grew up as a Catholic and you would think the concept of Satan would come up a lot, but actually it didn't hardly at all. I don't remember any discussion of whether Satan existed or not. What I heard was temptation, which had nothing to do with any entity named Satan. Yeah. It was just personal temptation.
Well, Murat and I were kind of discussing this last night, and we kind of feel like Catholicism is the best version of American Christianity to a certain extent because it's retained the most tradition, you know, and it's done the least doing. The least doing away.
Right? It's also generally pretty happy. It's Catholicism that invented purgatory, which gives you a second chance.
Right. And also, I mean, Catholics are just, they can take credit for a lot of the good that's been done philanthropically, you know, and otherwise through volunteering and such.
It's amazing how many great scientists have come out of the Jesuits, for instance. It's Father de la Maître who was an astronomer in the early 20th century, and he actually convinced Einstein Einstein believed in the single state universe, and it was Father de la Maître that convinced him otherwise, that working on Hubble's sightings of the expanding universe, he convinced Einstein the universe is expanding. And he's just one example of many. Consider Mendel, you know, the 18th century monk who gave us our concept of genetics.
Yeah,
right? And some Jesuits were actually very active, especially in Mexico, a handful were very active against the way the Spaniards brutally treated the native.
Who was that Mexicans. One bishop? He had that famous thing against slavery. I think it was also B or something. I don't know. He had a famous like letter or document like bashing slavery. But I don't know what his name was.
I don't know.
Wait, what?
Oh. I'm just looking at Zach. He's like holding his wine and his microphone, and this is like he's just.
Which one?
It's like that time you were telling me about. You were at that Sting concert, and you had 2 margaritas.
And I rolled my ankle down the stairs. Oh, and I felt so bad because my right margarita dumped down the stairwell and it landed on this lady. And I was like, "Sorry," and it was like 3 floors down, but it landed right on her. And then my cousin-in-law or something like that during at the time, like, helped me. And then I walked back into Sting with a margarita and a half.
Zach, the two-fisted podcaster.
Yeah. I don't know. Wine and amplification. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Ah, you got to lubricate those brain cells.
Everyone, also, you should listen to Bailey's podcast, The Wad Wad Pod. That's WWAD space POD.
Thank you for pronouncing it. I always wondered that.
I always wondered
that too. I mostly just wrote it for a lot of years. But WAD WAD stands for why we are doing what we are doing.
Why we are doing what we are doing. Similar mindset of like
diddy wah diddy
questioning. So we should. We have one. Do we have another?
We could actually go on for like five or six more. But like the next one.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to do one more, and then we should go to our first piece.
Okay.
We got pieces selected.
What's that?
You got pieces selected, right?
I've got one. I don't know about you.
I'll think of something for the next one.
Like musical selections.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And do you have a poem, or you were going to read something?
I have actually not a poem, but something that you might find pretty interesting. But we'll go to the fifth one.
Okay.
Okay. And this is, I think. We can all agree it's relatively positive. It allows for the dissemination of many more ideas through lectures, podcasts, and online journals. Yeah. All right, let's admit right away that many of these online venues don't have to undergo the editorial scrutiny that a book or magazine must pass under. But if one uses some discernment, one can learn a lot from various sources on the net. Yes? No? Yes.
Absolutely a pro, yeah.
I completely agree.
Yeah. I've learned so many things on the internet.
Just on YouTube alone.
Yeah, just on YouTube alone. That's what I meant. The internet, just YouTube.
I mean, on YouTube, you can watch a chipmunk do a dance, or you can listen to some college professor discuss Erasmus Darwin.
Or you can go back in history and look up like concerts that you wish you could have gone to, or you know what I mean?
Yeah. The thing is, the knowledge is so much more digestible, right? And I don't mean that like, you know, books or, you know, whatever, but it's like, there are some great like channels for, you know, history and philosophy and whatever topic that really do a great job of getting in depth, like the same content you'll get in the book,
making you but interested in it.
Yeah, you know, like I mean, books are, you know, I'm not gonna shit on books or anything, but like,
please don't.
No, but like, for example, there's a great history channel called Kings and Generals and History of Civilization. Like, there's great ones that go super in depth, like. Mm-hmm. I'll probably learn more from like YouTube videos than anything else.
Seriously. Yeah. I teach myself most of the shit I learn in class because the professors poorly explain it. I have to go on YouTube and do it. And that's partially because everything is online at the moment.
So would you say that YouTube, if you use discernment, YouTube or just the net in general, can serve as a valid substitute for a library?
I think so. I mean,
online library
temporarily.
Well, there are online libraries. You can get lots of books on.
No, I know, but I mean, like, online, the internet's library, not
a speaking library.
Yeah, speaking video library. I think at the moment, things of all things.
I mean, in terms of it as actually being a source, maybe it's not that great because it's like there's still
you can't
like
use
room
it as
for
a source on your paper. Can you?
I've used it before, but
YouTube.
What?
Well, not paper. I use it for a speech before, but like,
okay,
it's not the greatest of sources, but like. It's the same thing with like Wikipedia or whatever. It's like it's someone else wrote it, but they got it from, you know, other sources. And
most of the time, they say where they
and like
or something.
And it's usually, you know, accurate. It's usually fine. Do not agree. It's like you don't cite that stuff. But like it's good to learn, you know.
But you know, getting back to the point that if I publish a book, it goes under lots of scrutiny. It's even just publishing an article. If I publish an article with any historical information in it. And I published a number in many in magazines. That there is somebody in their editorial office who is checking facts.
Yeah.
So every fact I put down, there's
trial
somebody in their office who is double checking my facts.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't happen
before it goes to be published.
Before it goes in, before you see it in print.
Yeah.
Right. But that doesn't happen on the net. I can say whatever I want on the net.
Yeah.
I can tell you that, like Bishop Usher, the earth was created in 4004 BC on an October morning.
Yeah, same thing goes with opinions, though, too.
Exactly.
So you got to, like, differentiate facts and opinions.
But books and articles and magazines, they do go under that editorial scrutiny.
Yeah.
But there is a hierarchy of outlets, right? Like, there is, I'm not sure about, you know, with the same, you know, equalness for a book, but, like, there are pretty decent, you know, barriers for like, you know, journals or whatever, you know, scholarly journals online or even or even just the word of like the mouth of the audience sometimes, you know, garners some educated opinions which prevent it. But the thing with books is like that doesn't mean that like, you know, there is that famous book where like that says like China discovered America first, and it's like all over in every bookstore. Like it got through for some reason, and you know, I think it's somewhat the same conditions. I think somewhat exist in both realms.
Well, every historian or every author brings biases to their work, right? And I remember reading a number of books in the Napoleonic Wars, where there was one English author in particular. I don't remember his name, but his bias against Napoleon was
visceral.
Yes, it was that, but it bordered on irresponsibility.
I don't know. I feel like I can serve as embodied substantiation for Ishak's point because I'm a very autodidactic person who is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, has dropped out of college, and I'm just trying to be heard on the internet, and let me tell you, nobody listens. So that hierarchy does exist.
Yeah.
Right. So we can actually, you know, turn off a podcast like we can close a book.
Yeah.
Like this podcast is a great example. We've been doing this for 2 years. I don't know if anybody listens to this at all. Like, I mean, we get like 3 or 4 listens on some episodes, and that's probably me checking the audio quality.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm certain people listen to it. I listen to it.
Yeah, you listen to it. I listen to it after I post it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
But now there's certain individuals that listen to it.
Okay, so
next question, or
Sean's going to read something for us, and then we're going to go into Bach's Mass in B minor, the first movement,
wow,
the Kyrie, because I've been really into it lately, and it's just like one of the probably one of the greatest pieces of music ever written, honestly.
Okay, so I'm going to read. Usually I read poems, but tonight, in commemoration of yesterday's inauguration of President Biden.
Yes.
There have been actually 3 very dangerous inaugurations, and 2 of them were of President Lincoln, his first in 1861 and then in 1865. The first one, he was actually snuck into Washington for fear of assassination. The second one, which took place on March 6, 1865, smallpox was raging through the Capitol. There was an incredible storm, which I'll read about. And also the war was still going on. The war would end, in the next month with General Lee surrendering his Army of North Virginia to General Grant at Appomattox. And so this is actually the reason I think this is worthwhile listening to. It's written by one of America's great, great poets, Walt Whitman, who also served as a, yes, you know, he also served as a writer of just like newspaper stuff, right? Right. So it actually goes on for a little while, but I'll choose sections as we go on through the day or through this evening. So the first section, he talks about the last hours of Congress and the president, but the next one is incident at the Capitol. So we speak in the past tense. The inauguration took place on the previous Saturday from which Whitman is speaking. He calls it incident at the Capitol. To begin with the morning of Saturday, the day just dawned, but in half darkness, everything dim, leaden, and soaking. In that dim light of dawn, under such circumstances, a strange occurrence happened in the Capitol, in the hall of the House. The members were nervous, from long-drawn duty, exhausted, some asleep and many half asleep. The gaslight mixed with dingy daybreak produced an unearthly effect. The poor little sleepy stumbling pages, the smell of the hall, the members with heads leaning in their desks asleep, the sound of the voices speaking with unusual intonations, the general morale atmosphere also of the close of this important session, the grandeur of the hall itself, with its effects of vast shadows up toward the panels and spaces over the galleries, all made a marked combination. In the midst of this, with the suddenness of a thunderbolt, burst one of the most angry and crashing storms of rain and wind ever heard. It beat like a deluge on the heavy glass roof of the hall, and the wind literally howled and roared. For a moment, and no wonder, the nervous and sleeping representatives were thrown into confusion. The slumberers waked with fear. Some started for the doors. Some looked up with blanched cheeks and lips to the roof, and the little pages began to cry. It was a scene. But it was over almost as soon as the drowsy men were actually awake. They recovered themselves. The storm raged on, beating, dashing, and with loud noises at times. But the house went ahead with its business then, I think, as calmly and with as much deliberation as at any time in its career. Perhaps the shock did it good. One is not without an impression, after all, amid these members of Congress of both the houses, that if the flat and selfish routine of their duties should ever be broken in upon by some great emergency involving great danger and calling for first-class personal qualities, those qualities would be found generally forthcoming and from men not now credited with them.
That was Sean reading from, what was that one more time?
Walt Whitman's account of President Lincoln's inauguration on March 6, 1865.
And Bach's Mass in B minor.
All right, what's the question?
We're moving on?
Yeah.
All right.
Moving on, okay.
It's this point.
Okay. So, sixth in our list of pros and cons on the web, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. It allows many people either too busy or too shy to connect socially through dating sites. Now, let's qualify that, because admittedly, the web also allows access to incredible amounts of pornography and even illegal sites of child pornography and to promotion of trafficking. But getting back to the original point, people that are very shy, they can meet other people on the web through dating services and the like.
Yeah. Open up via keyboard because they can't express how they feel or what they want.
I'd really like
to
go up and say hello to her, but I'm too shy.
Yeah, I'll use my keyboard. I don't know. I've met people that are like that, for sure. I per se am not like that. I'm a very loudmouth person. Yeah. But there's situations where I would be shy, I suppose. I don't know. Like, I feel like you already described the pros and cons in that question because of like the child stuff and then the trafficking. That's like just bad in general.
I mean, I think it's just I think in any of these situations, not any, but like the political activism, the social groups and the dating, and like they're overall just outlets of what people are already kind of gonna do, or at least helpers in a certain sense. Like, I think they're, I don't want to say they're neutral because they always have like the bad sides and you want to always say it's a con because of the bad things. But like, it's just an outlet for people to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Or at least.
I don't think the dating websites are bad or anything.
No,
like
no.
That.
Oh, I live with, you know, I mean, from that, you know, so. Yeah.
What exactly do you mean by bad? Because some people would think that because sex.
No, I was just talking about like the child and the trafficking.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's always going to be
bad. Those two things specifically. Everything else.
But on one end, that the fact that it's online is partially a good thing because it can be traced now.
Yeah, that, I guess you're right then.
And then because before then, what the hell was it really?
Word
probably actually, just snatch and run.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, I would assume in countries like, you know,
maybe it's
the third world countries with like little internet, like, I don't know, Afghanistan or something, like that stuff is probably way more prevalent and people probably do not care, you know?
Now here people are iffy about it because the feds are all over that shit.
Yeah.
Even on things like the deep web, like the feds get their way, you know, in eventually.
Oh, they're in there, yeah. I mean, and hitmen and stuff like that. Yeah. A lot of them are just agents.
Yeah.
I feel like a pigeon in between you guys. I'm just like.
And some people would say good or bad is it's like subjective in the sense like. Some people would say that's because sex is more available via Tinder is a good thing for depending on the person. Mm-hmm. Somebody would say that it's horrible. Who knows?
I was going to say, I think because we're kind of giving similar answers with a lot of these points, I was just going to say that like, I think there's a fundamental question in the sense of like, in most cases, the internet is the accelerator of certain, either accelerator of certain actions or...
The facilitator.
Yeah. So in a sense... If we're really going to hit the internet where it lives, then I think it's more like...
Would you consider yourself typing it in?
I mean, like, the overall, like, is that function really good?
Yeah.
The facilitation or the acceleration? Like, do we need that? Can we control that? Are we designed for that?
Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah. Like, because that I can go with any situation.
Yeah.
You know, that the internet's used for.
Well, pornography is big business, right? Yeah. Okay. And I actually took a moment this morning to look up pornography on the web. Because it was easy, because that's one of the benefits of the web.
You can look probably up millions of other people.
Right? Yeah. No, I didn't seek out pornography. I wanted to see what pornography was like on the web. Right? Okay. There's a difference, right? Research. Right. I was researching.
That's so funny.
It wasn't that kind of research. Yeah. What I wanted was numbers.
Yeah.
Okay? That's what I wanted.
Oh, I see.
Right? Okay. And because one person a number of years told me that 90% of the web is used for pornography, which I found extraordinary. And I think that's an exaggeration.
I think so.
I don't know.
But when I looked up numbers today, it said something effective. About 40% of internet activity is pornography. Yeah. And that every second, close to $4,000 is spent on pornography on the web. Almost every second. Yeah, staggering number, right?
That's crazy. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, that is a lot
of money people are making.
The nature
But let's face it, pornography's always been big business. But now you can do it in the comfort of your living room or your study at home, and you don't have to walk into one of those X-rated stores.
Yeah. Or it's also safer for
Video City.
For the women or the men or the transgender people that are providing the service. And now they, like YouTube, have a say in what they don't want to do, like cam girls or cam guys or like OnlyFans.
Yeah, have a platform.
Yeah.
But that's not true in trafficking and child pornography.
Oh, that's no. Because that's unassociated with like regulation.
That's like bundling it all up into one. I feel like it's pornography, and then that's why I was saying no, that's a con for the child and like trafficking.
There is a connection. The connection is, actually, I learned this recently. Apparently, there was a controversy with Pornhub recently where basically, like, there was a bunch of, like, kidnapped girls that were, and the videos of them, you know, being raped were being, like, uploaded easily. I mean, you know,
that's
the
crazy.
Hub took care of it, but, like, it was still, like, going on for a long time. You know what I mean? So it's like,
nice.
You know.
Sounds like a fort.
Huh? Yeah. Now it's all, you have to be verified to like do shit there, but you know.
That's crazy.
It's not like, it doesn't mean that the practices are connected, but you know.
I think in some sense, if women decide against engaging in actual prostitution or sex work, they would rather go on their OnlyFans or their cam site and in the comfort of their bedroom.
Yeah.
And if they were going to decide to do sex work, they just show some skin, make some cash, and not risk getting HIV, not risk getting murdered, not risk getting raped. Yeah. So in some sense, it is good.
Sometimes it's not even sexual. Like on New Year's, I met two chicks that came over to my house that were guests from my friend. And she was telling us how she has an OnlyFans and she only takes pictures of her feet. And sends it to dudes.
Well, that could be sexual.
And they have a foot fetish. And these guys pay hundreds of dollars just for pictures of feet. And I was like, man, you think I can get a foot picking? Like, you think I get $200 with my hobbit foot? I do not think so.
I mean, again, I think we're
I was like, what is this?
We're hitting the same
nail
thing
on the head
with everything. There is just a platform that people use for good or bad reasons, and
there's degrees to it
for different activities. But
I think it all has to do with your motive. Or, like, what you're seeking.
Again, that's the whole thing with the internet.
Yeah, how are you?
Everyone already had the motives before. It's just the internet is just providing that platform, you know.
All of the things.
You know, you can play a game of, like, you know, to a degree, how many of these things have the cons over the pros and whatnot. But I think it's just, like, the real problem is just, like, can we even deal with that? Can we even deal with this accelerator? It's, you know, this platform as a general.
Is it getting better or worse?
Well, it also raises the question, I think, of along the lines of legalizing marijuana. Maybe it would be better for all if prostitution was legalized. It's going to happen anyways.
I think a comedian just said that.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'll bet that it's an argument out there somewhere.
I don't know if it was Dave Chappelle
or just for the reference of everybody, I think sex workers prefer it be called full service sex work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Full service. Right.
Yeah. I recently learned this. I do not mean to be like talking down anybody.
No, no.
But I just am sharing the love.
So that's a that's a politically correct term.
I don't know about politically correct, but I think like sex worker.
That's a good.
It's the slang on the street.
Prostitution, okay. Like biblical or something.
Yeah, it ends up being kind of like.
Well, it's biblical, really, but it's also, if you go back to ancient Babylon, priestesses were prostitutes. In Babylonian temples.
And is that
because they thought of,
or courtesans.
Well, they thought of procreation as a gift of the gods. And if you go back to the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is the earliest bestseller in Western culture, the way Enkidu, the wild man, is civilized, he's given one of the prostitutes from the temple, whom he makes love with for 7 days straight. And then he's given bread, and then he's given beer, and he's made incredibly drunk.
He didn't eat for 7 days, and then he got bread and beer?
And he got incredibly drunk, right?
Jesus, dude, this guy's a champ, MVP, the real goat. That's insane, man.
But the point is...
Could you go for 7 days and then just, like, here's some bread and beer?
No, I mean, like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I could... Like,
well, the point is that the prostitute and the bread and the beer are all aspects of a settled culture, uh-huh, as opposed to a migrant culture.
Tradition.
Right. It's moving, man, from the pastoral hell? Tradition to the settled city tradition.
I dropped tomato on my knee. Sorry.
Okay. I didn't know that.
That's crazy.
Babylonia, I mean, they were like pretty, according to like, you know, now our modern Christian,
well, it's Babylonian
culture,
but it's,
they would call them heathens.
It's actually Sumerian, so it goes back to about 3000 BC.
Yeah,
and it's a good chance that story was probably in circulation before the written word, before it got written down.
Mm-hmm.
But texts of that story were found in Assyria as well as later in Babylon. It was the first great bestsellers.
Wow.
But the Epic of Gilgamesh. It also, as a sidebar here, right, it has nothing to do with our conversation, but it also tells the story of the flood, which is amazingly close to the biblical story.
Really?
And it precedes the biblical story. And if you remember that the Jewish nation was held hostage in Babylon for starting about 600 BC, that might be where they got the story of Noah. They changed it a lot.
Yeah,
that's
the Tigris and Euphrates flooding and whatnot.
I want a sidebar, sidebar.
Yeah. Right.
I was taking an Uber here 2 days ago, and the Uber driver asked me if I believe in Noah's Ark. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And he's like, do you believe in Noah's Ark? And I said, I didn't know what to say because I didn't expect him to ask me a question. And I was like, I'm not sure. Like, that was the first, I couldn't think of anything. I was like, I'm not religious. I don't know.
First, did he respond with anything? Like,
and he just started rattling off something about Noah's Ark. And then I was like, all right. And then got out of the car.
Well,
it was pretty bizarre.
Some people claim they found the remains of Noah's Ark on, was it Mount Ararat?
Yeah, Mount Ararat.
In Armenia?
Like that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you see like the, it's like a boat almost. Like
another one of those conspiracy theories?
Yeah. Yeah. Old
like,
school.
Dude, if that was a boat that's still been there, like, oh my God.
That's crazy, though.
Well, there's no doubt that floods were are still a common occurrence.
There's so many flood stories in China and Egypt, you know,
ancient Greece.
Yeah, it's right. Everywhere.
It's right. Such a strange topic to start off a car ride with. Murat gets in, closes the door.
Right.
Hey, yeah, do you believe in Noah's Ark?
Before that, what? He had asked me. He asked me only two questions the entire ride. The first one was, do I have YouTube Premium?
Oh, yeah.
And the second one was, do you believe in Noah's Ark?
These are questions we need to be asked in life.
Yeah. Shall we move on?
Yeah. Let's
do it. All right. So number seven, okay? Number seven, it allows invalids to socialize from their homes or beds, thus saving often great inconvenience of any travel. And maybe aside from this, also virtual travel is possible now. I know an individual who has one of those headsets that they can virtually travel through things like the Vatican and Notre Dame.
You're talking about virtual reality, VR.
I guess I am.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
Okay.
But it is definitely immersive. My brother has a VR, and it's cool. And it's funny that you brought that up, because I was telling Murad about this like a couple weeks ago. There's people that will just go on to like... So there's this platform they can go on to. You can be any character in any movie, any cartoon.
Come on, VR chat, right?
Yeah, VR chat. But you're just like in this open world. Yeah. And every character is an actual real human being that's just talking. And groups are like... But you can walk and explore.
So let me get this. You're actually in with a group of other people on the web.
All over the world.
As part of a movie.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
not just a movie. Just like characters from different movies in an open world experience.
The whole point of that.
Isn't that crazy? Like you could have Winnie the Pooh next to Al Capone. Like yeah. It's nuts.
And but there are compilations on YouTube. There are people who talk about like the deepest stuff. Like
yeah, that's what I'm trying to get into.
My military trauma or
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just people. It's just like a hang-up thing.
There's people that can actually convey themselves without being judged or known who they are, but can express themselves when they went into war and they have PTSD.
There's so many kids who got bullied
that had to deal with bullying their whole entire lives, and they finally found friends that are willing to listen to them and give them advice. And like, you know what I mean? Like there's so many different levels to it.
So do you think that encapsulates the pros and cons of the web, that on one level it can be very superficial?
I think it's a pro.
Yeah. But on one level it can be very
like
superficial.
Counseling,
but on another level, yeah, that counseling that, mm-hmm. that I'm able to connect with people that will actually listen to me and help me in some mm-hmm. way. So it goes to those extremes.
I think VR is like another version of Crisis Hotline.
Okay.
To be mm-hmm. honest with you. It is.
There's this other thing that kind of along those lines that Bailey told me about called Clubhouse. Have you heard of Clubhouse?
No, I've never heard of Clubhouse.
It's a super, super exclusive
club.
It's this app that you can only get onto if you're invited.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, imagine it's like the podcast,
yeah.
But people can jump in on the podcast.
Okay.
And there's like seats, for instance. And the person that created the room can like open the seats and like anybody can talk, or there's like certain people talking at certain times and a bunch of people listening at all times.
So it opens up like a Congress being viewed on TV.
It's
sounds like a Discord server, really.
It's like a Discord server, but like more.
It's like Zoom in a podcast made
like
love.
It's like more streamlined and more, it incorporates people more.
Yeah.
It's based off of like of conversation, like actual vocal conversation, because mm-hmm. there's literally no messaging.
Yeah.
So literally, you make a profile and you either talk or you listen.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
I actually have one invite I can send you. It's iPhone only.
That's
so
cool.
If you want to check it out, it's pretty cool.
I have iPhones because I have three invites.
Not me.
So.
Yeah, I got an iPhone.
I spent a lot of time on there, so I got extra invites.
I had to get an invite from some medical student in Hungary or I think it was in Hungary because Bailey gave it away to somebody else.
Oh,
I was pissed.
Now she got extra invite.
But it's so cool. I mean, I've only been on it one time. I have it on my phone, but
that's
we
so
met
cool.
some of the coolest people on there.
That's
I started
awesome.
This. I started this room called Ben Shapiro shit talk room. Yeah.
Oh my god.
And people jumped on that. They were like, "Oh, I want to talk shit about Ben Shapiro."
Ass p word.
All right, I'm gonna admit to my cultural ignorance. Who's Ben Shapiro?
Oh, he's this like modern. I don't say modern, but
he's a guy who thinks he's punk rock conservative, but he's he's just another neocon. He's basically he wouldn't say it, but he's pretty much a far right guy. He's
talks that fast.
Yeah, he talks fast, which shows that he thinks he's smart because he talks fast, but he's really dumb. He's like, I don't know, like he's like a 30-year-old Jewish guy, and he's just. He has like insane policy ideas. It's just like, God damn it.
I can describe him in two words. Pent up. Yeah. He's pent up. He needs some love, man. That's what he needs in his life.
Well, the love he gets is, I mean, according to his Twitter, I mean, like.
Man, ain't that much
all
love.
You need is love.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest controversy with him was with that English conservative guy. I think you know what I'm talking about. Where he was on BBC, right?
Who, Milo Yiannopoulos?
No. It was Ben Shapiro, but it was like this old conservative guy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So basically, the guy is just being kind of objective. You know, the guy is conservative himself, the interviewer. And he's asking Ben Shapiro these questions like, you know, just to, you know, give him some tough spots a little bit. And Shapiro doesn't know anything about the guy. And he's like, he calls out the guy as like this leftist, like, y'all, you leftist and you're, you know, abolitionist. Or not abolitionist. Whatever. Just BS stuff, and he's really embarrassing himself because the guy says like, he's like, Mr. Shapiro, if you knew who I was, you would not be saying that, or something like that. Because the guy is one of the most far right guys in England, and Shapiro's like, you're a leftist, you're a blah 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 blah, you know, you're for abortion, blah 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 blah, or you know, whatever. Basically, and he storms off the interview.
I heard that a lot of people's criticism of that was because, you know, he goes around like college campuses arguing a bunch of like people that don't understand, you know, politics, and I'm pretty sure he has a law degree. I don't know, but anyway, it's funny because that guy, he wasn't even pushing his buttons,
no.
And he was just, like you said, pent up, ready to go off on somebody. But I guess he admitted that he was wrong about that.
Well, I mean, I would
hope
so.
Which is rare.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen him show any.
Probably because the other guy was a right wing guy. If he was like a, you know. He would have jumped
the gun and made an assumption, and he's not probably prone to do that. And he probably doesn't like to be wrong.
Yeah, no.
I think that's the thing. I know, but he doesn't like to be. But when he really is wrong, and he knows that he's wrong, and everyone knows he's wrong, then I think he'll go.
He has some really bad opinions with music as well. Like,
yeah. Is he a musician?
No, he is. He plays violin. And from what I've heard, his violin playing is pretty good. Yeah. Not like perfect.
He's not virtuoso or anything, but he can play.
Yeah.
All right. Should we move on from Ben Shapiro?
Yeah,
anyway, Clubhouse, if you want, you should check it out. It's pretty cool.
Clubhouse to Ben Shapiro. Now we're back.
Yeah, we can invite you if you need.
Yeah, I'm down. I like that. That
okay,
cool.
But wait, one more thing about Ben Shapiro. I saw this like critically wonderful take on Ben Shapiro, which was that he's good at debate, but not ever furthering discourse.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes.
You know, like that he knows sense. All the tricks to like win in the moment, you know, but he's not changing anything for his own way.
He was actually the guy that made me like hate the idea of debates because it's like, dude, it's like, you're so wrong, but I hate that you're winning this debate, you know.
The way that I view it is like,
it's like if you at all get it, you can tell that he's winning, but you're just like, not for good reason.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
He's the guy that you want on your team, but not the guy that you'll invite to the party afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, he's good at debating. He's just good at making people look stupid even when he's wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Next question.
Okay, so we have two left.
Okay.
Okay, so the web also allows a platform for indie musicians and writers. I have a friend who makes a point of surfing as much of the independent music downloaded every week. And it also allows venues for writers to publish works for free and not have to wait for a publisher's acceptance. Admittedly, self-publishing online hardly reaches the same audience, except by some freak chance of popularity, but it does allow freedom of editing and choice of material. And I will say that, for instance, me, I have been published regularly in newspapers and magazines, but those have been articles about hiking and climbing. But more recently, in the last year, I've published poetry on allpoetry.com.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of waiting for editors to get back to you 6 weeks afterwards, I can put up a poem anytime I want when I feel it's ready to put online.
Mm-hmm.
And those who want to read it can. I'm not using up any paper, so I'm saving forest as a good ecologist.
Yeah. I guess that's definitely one pro for the internet, saving paper and saving the trees. But when it comes to art forms like that, like music and promoting your band or shows or poetry, or I think all those things are pros.
Yeah.
You know, when it's your passion that you're basically showing your heart to other people, like hoping, or not hoping, but like seeing if someone likes it the same way you do, or views it the same, or having a different opinion, you know. But it just being out there and it being seen is enough.
Yeah.
And it's like some kind of acceptance, which is cool.
And it provides us, I think, you know, for me, writing poetry, it provides me with a motivation. I want to finish a poem this week and put it online by the weekend.
It's a goal that you're setting, and you want to finish it.
Just to throw in here, my YouTube account is at 993 subscribers.
As hey, bravissimo!
You got seven
gonna
more?
Be the seven more. In fact, if you can hit seven more, that'll be a birthday present for you.
Yeah. We've got an hour. That's a lot. Seven subscribers in an hour. It's happened before, but at midnight on a Thursday, I don't think so.
Wow, and let me put in a plug for Murat. I think they're well researched and well done.
Thank you.
Most stuff is all of the things.
We're recently we've been recording also your audio, Sean, of spoken word of various different stories and such. So that'll be on YouTube soon too. I don't know what Sean's gonna call it, but we're in the process of that as well.
And a lot of that's not my writing. A lot of it is like Grimm's fairy tales and old Homeric hymns and things like that.
So we have one last topic.
One last one. I think most of us can agree this is a pretty positive one.
Okay.
Should we go to a piece after this?
What's that?
Should we go to a piece after this?
Yeah.
And you're going to probably read some
more. I can read some more of Whitman's account of... Because we haven't even touched on Lincoln yet, even though Whitman's talking about his inauguration.
Yeah. We're only... Yeah, we've got about 40 minutes or so left.
Some ideas.
Time to kill.
Yeah, we got some time.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right.
I have no
Bailey
ideas.
Says she has ideas. But finally, I think most of us can agree this is a positive aspect of the web. And speaking personally, I can agree with this. The web has made available libraries full of texts. One can legally download thousands of books no longer in copyright, including the complete works of almost every major poet, novelist, philosopher, scientist, and even explorers in the English language. And also many translations that are out of copyright. And often more than one translation of almost every major foreign writer. This means that one can usually find not only older translations of foreign works, some of these translations may seem a bit dated, but some of the older translations usually have more technical and even literary integrity than the liberties taken by some contemporary translators. One can't find all the library, but a lot of PDFs are available of relatively recently published works.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, and I will admit that I oftentimes put together for my reading groups collections of essays and poems about a particular writer. And I recently put together a bunch of them, but one of them was Percy Bysshe Shelley, the famous English poet, romantic English poet, who died in 1822. And I put together 450 pages inside of like a couple of weeks, including poems, essays, analyses, very little of my own work, like I'd say less than 1% of my own work. But the fact that I could get almost all this online, and I'm talking about actually legitimate criticism, not somebody writing a college paper for somebody who wants to buy it for $20.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about legitimate high criticism. Yeah. And to me, that's extraordinary that I would have spent a year at the typewriter trying to type this stuff in and finding the books. Right, but I could find the books online as opposed to try to find them in even the local library or having them sent from other libraries out of state. And the fact that we can do that without even leaving home to me is actually astounding.
Yeah.
That's a big pro. I mean, no one can burn down the Library of Alexandria anymore. So, yeah. It's stored now.
Man, what a chip that is. Yeah.
It was burned multiple times, but
it's crazy.
It was estimated, 200,000 texts were in the Alexandria Library when it was burned down.
Is that Egypt?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Egypt, at one point after Alexander's death, Egypt became one of the great one of the cultural centers of the world, of the Western world. Yeah. And that library was one of probably the greatest library ever.
I think it was burned, I think, in multiple, at least once during Roman times.
Accident. It wasn't some pyromaniac going
on. Oh, okay. Right.
Well, there is that one,
torch.
I mean, the thing is, there was, the burning that most people mention is the one during the Roman times, I think during Caesar's time, but there was the one under, when the Muslims took over, and I think that was intentionally burning it, actually. But that was a much smaller scale. The library had already been pretty much destroyed by then, but... But the point is, like, that's not going to happen again with the internet, basically, fortunately.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that loss was astounding. It probably had the complete works of Oedipus. I'm sorry, not Oedipus, but the three major Greek tragedians, Aeschylus, Sophocles, and Euripides. And of them, it's estimated that I think Aeschylus, it's estimated he wrote 120 plays, but only about 9 of them come down to us now. And they were probably all in that library at one point.
Well, I've heard actually counter ideas for this, where basically they're trying. I mean, I'm not really sure about this, but people, like, basically, it wasn't the only. I mean, it was the pretty much the best library around town, but like there were still other places with most likely the same. I mean, that's actually kind of controversial, but like there were other places that might still have a lot of those lost works, and that's why I've heard opinion like that, where it's like, oh, the burning was actually not that bad. I'm not sure how accurate that is.
That's why we have those other texts that come down to us.
Yeah.
Somebody copied them out, put them someplace else.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are back.
So this is gonna be our last little block of for the episode, and I wouldn't say closing thoughts, but is there anything? I suppose some thoughts that we've been having throughout that we want to maybe express that we haven't talked about so far. I have a few in mind, but
I don't have too many. Yeah. I mean, it's very obvious how much the internet has impacted everybody. And I think that people, like any other new concept, are hesitant to allow themselves to, you know, become one with it. But, you know, I think along the lines of like sex traffic or like terrorist groups on Facebook or whatever, it always comes back to one thing, and that's discernment. It has nothing to do with the internet, realistically. On some level, at least.
And the word that's coming to my mind is utility. It's funny, today in class, my philosophy class, some guy was talking about he was talking about technology and whatnot, and the teacher brought up Heidegger, and the whole Heideggerian position on technology, it fits really well with the internet, but in a much more, I think, profound way, where, yeah, there's nothing intrinsic. Like the bad parts of the internet, I don't think come from the sex traffic. I mean, yeah, those are bad parts, but like you said, it's not really the internet's fault. Like those are just kind of like almost like symptoms. But like basically, the whole position on technology with Heidegger was where you see phenomena as objects of utility, and with the internet, it's weird because it's supposed to be mostly just an object based on knowledge, where you're combining the asset of knowledge with a typical human function of seeing a utility in objects, and that's where you get all the bad stuff. Although that's kind of a cool way of thinking, I think it's actually maybe a little bit wrong in the fact that, like, I think the internet in itself is becoming something much more, where instead of utility, it's more like its own world. Where it's creating its own culture, it's creating its own, just its own thing, you know, its own phenomena in a certain sense, where it itself will create utility instead of seeing it as a utility. I just want to bring that out there because it's like, I don't know, I've mentioned this maybe a few times in previous episodes, but like, I don't think we as humans are, I mean, maybe we will in the future, but I don't think we're capable to really handle such a thing, this massive thing, at least right now. I think we're kind of facing the consequences of that, really.
Kind of calls back to our Ted Kaczynski.
Yeah.
Is it Kaczynski?
Yeah, it's Kaczynski. Yeah.
Kind of calls back because we were talking about technological singularity too then. And
One could say the same thing about the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Our inability to handle that properly.
Well, yeah. With Kaczynski, it's like the autonomy is being lost. Oh, actually, this is actually pretty big with maybe in relation to education, but like the autonomy is lost with technology. That's his whole position. And with the internet, that's kind of true in a sense, where the internet provides so much like interconnectivity, where not only does itself destroy autonomy, but it it furthers other ways to destroy autonomy, like through AI and eventually like the loss of like certain jobs and whatnot. But I don't know. I'm thinking of it more of it in the Heideggerian position where it's just like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I think it's just becoming, it's not the same as you know, the reason why it started, you know, in the beginning.
What yeah. is, really?
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's probably what Kaczynski would say. Yeah. But yeah, I mean.
Can't step in the same river twice.
Yeah. That's true.
I don't know. I just think it's evolved like anything else as we've evolved.
Well, I just think it's on such a different state because any invention in the past wasn't like the thing is that this deals with it's so much like the what's that thing called, man? I can't believe I'm forgetting it. The you know the Morse not the Morse code stuff, but yeah, you know it.
Give me a hint.
It's that thing where they used to tap back.
That's
back
Morse
in
the, code.
Morse code.
Yeah, well, Morse code, but the actual machine for it. I forget the name for it. The point is, like, maybe that's like a similar example, but like, the whole function of it is the idea of knowledge itself, which is different. Like, it's instead of other inventions where it's like some sort of like physical utility, the internet itself, it's like it's based on some sort of like knowledge, like this
algorithm
interconnectivity of knowledge and even creation of new knowledge with like you know calculations and whatnot. So I think it's a whole new game, and I think it's. Yeah, I don't think we've ever really. It's almost like dealing with another person.
It's still so new.
Yeah, that's true.
It is still so new. I remember in sixth grade, sitting on a bus, and someone having a cell phone out, and was typing on the buttons. And I was like, "Who are you calling?" He's like, "I'm not calling. I'm texting." And I was like, "What's texting?" And then 20 more kids are like hovered on this kid in the third aisle of the bus, just like. Not giving him any space at all, breathing over his shoulder just because of new technology. And yeah. Going from like sixth grade to now where you can find everything and everything, like anything and everything, like it's so crazy. And it's going so fast at such a fast rate. Yeah. Like, do you remember tube TVs? Like big, like a 55-inch tube TV was like,
yeah, it was.
I don't know, like six feet deep, and then like, mm-hmm. like I don't know.
And it didn't even look that great.
No, it didn't. It was just like kind of muddy, but still, it was like, ooh, it's big, it's nice. And now you got TVs that are as thin as his MacBook. You know.
By the way, it's called a telegraph sounder.
And we can go back even farther to where when I was young, we only got three or four channels.
I know, that's astounding.
And they shut down at midnight. Yeah. And so I would wake up on Saturday mornings to watch Looney Tunes, and I would wait for the what do they call it, the test to end, and they would play the Star Spangled Banner, and television would begin for the day, like around 6:30 a.m. Right?
When you told me that, I think we talked about that like a month ago, and it like blew my mind. I was like, they stopped television?
Right. They stopped it.
But now we have I don't know about you guys, but I have my own version of that, is like having to use dial-up internet. Okay. And actually, your sister and I, you guys used to have this thing called Web TV. I don't know if you remember that.
I'm not sure.
You should ask your sister about it, man. It was like the first time I saw email. And it was like,
MSN. And
you would connect. Oh, yeah. We used to connect your guys' TV to this like small little thing. It was like a little cable box, and it would turn your guys' TV into like the internet. And like we would go on it and like go on Yahoo.
Yeah, she's mentioned about that. Yeah,
you should ask her about it. It's like one of the best memories I have, just because like it was so new.
Yeah,
and it was like the first time I had experienced email.
That's what I'm talking about. That feeling. As soon as like something new, but now I feel like we don't get that feeling anymore, you know.
Depends.
Well, I remember getting my first Walkman.
Maybe you're buying too. Maybe I don't know. Maybe you're buying too much technology too often.
Well, that's
not really buying anything anymore,
I don't think so.
Person. But like when I got my new iPhone, I'm still excited about like how quality it is, because
I buy
one phone every 5-6 years.
Yeah. But I guess that's the last time that I did. And that was right before New York.
Well, we're inundated all the time. There's a, you know, going back to my memories, there was a singer in the 70s and 80s named Loudon Wainwright III. Mm-hmm. He was pretty funny. He gave us Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road. That was one of his more famous songs. But in one of his songs, one of the lines was, "In this town, the television station shuts off at 2. What's a lonely rock and roller to do?"
That's awesome.
But now we're inundated, you know, 24 hours a day by 500 channels, or maybe 1,000. I don't know. I don't get cable, so I don't know. How many channels are there out there?
There's like 999 channels.
Oh, minimum.
Yeah. A lot of them are infomercials, but up to 450 to 565 or something like that, I would say. Movies, constant streaming, and on top of that, you could be watching that and then still be on your phone.
So should I file that away as useful information?
I don't know. It depends on what movie
information
you're watching.
Information is information. The thing with the internet is like it's self-perpetuating.
Yeah.
The more advanced it gets, the faster it gets, the more advanced it gets.
We're and
it
creating goes faster and faster and faster.
Technology in general is like that. And the internet's probably the biggest, just
the
like
fastest.
The biggest tool in that. Yeah. I'm going to reference Kaczynski. That's what he said about technology. He wouldn't have predicted it, predicted the internet's the actual evolution. Effectiveness.
Well, you can say about that. Going back to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, about 1750, and take more recently the history of flight.
Yeah.
You know, from the Wright brothers, 1912 to land on the moon in 1967.
Sorry. Right. Go ahead.
What's that?
I was like, I got a good question. So, say internet didn't exist, you guys are in college, and like computers don't exist. What do you do in a situation like that?
Library.
Libraries are closed because of COVID.
How
do you do your homework and research?
I think they would probably just postpone school at that point. If this were to happen during school or during college, or I mean, if there were no internet, they'd probably just they'd stop it.
I suppose you could
that's like a year of postponing.
You can probably research that what happened with the Spanish flu and see what they did then with college.
Oh yeah, it would be probably exactly like that.
Well, I went to school and you had to use the library.
Yeah.
So it's not an issue now with COVID. It's not an issue because you can do everything online.
Yeah.
But when I went to school, if I wanted to go look up something, I'd go down to the library and find the book, pull it out.
You ever
use the index?
You ever have that problem where you went there and some asshole already checked it out before you?
Of course.
What'd you do then?
I waited till it was returned.
Oh, dang.
I was going to say, you might be able to mail.
And I was also wrong about the Wright brothers. I think it was like 1901 or 1902 or 1903.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Right? Because by 1914, there were planes in the air in World War One. Right? So let me correct myself.
Yeah, but then obviously eventually you get to like space travel and whatnot, or these early forms of it now.
Space Force.
Oh yeah,
space force.
Yeah. But again, it's going faster and faster, and it's like I don't know if we can handle it. No,
that's crazy.
That's what they say with everything, though.
One thing we haven't discussed about the internet, which I would like to bring up, and that is that because we are not facing people, pardon my near redundancy, face to face. It means that a lot of people can be incredibly rude on the internet.
Oh, yeah, like
with
ghost
their
you?
Critiques. They can say the most malicious things.
Yeah.
Or nothing
at all.
And this goes not only in regards to saying somebody, criticizing somebody else's writing online, but also bullying online, that people can be incredibly cruel to each other because of the internet.
That's weird.
Because they're faceless. They're not confronting.
They're unknown.
They remain unknown, right?
They remain unknown, but they're the way they talk to you is.
And it doesn't frighten me, but it disappoints me that so many people can be so rude and so cruel on the
internet. You know what that's called? Well, it's on the internet. It's called a troll.
Is that what it's called?
Well, a troll? That's the term. They're a troll.
The slight positive
that they just like are out there.
They're just like fucking with people. Just
they just
for
want
fun.
To throw out those malicious comments.
Yeah,
Billy has a good theory about this.
Okay, please.
My theory is that all trolls are psychopaths, and they just show their colors when they're on the internet because they're not forced to like adjust to any social norms. And then my other thing is that. We throw around the term cancel culture, and it's really divisive because to folks who have been marginalized for centuries, like an opportunity to question powerful people on the internet is really treasured. And so what is attributed to cancel culture is actually like some people's like much craved for moment of having a voice. So as much as I think it's super negative, as much as I'm literally partnered to someone who's felt the ramifications of cancel culture hardcore and like what I consider to be a really unfair way. I think that maybe it would be more powerful if we use the word disposability instead of cancel culture, and we instead questioned the fact that anyone's ever disposable entirely. Because you're right, like you were saying, like, were we sitting face to face in person like we all are now, like, we would say things a little bit more intentionally and we wouldn't just throw around things that would make people question their worth.
Yeah, it dehumanizes the human. Yeah.
But does that go back, do you think, to gossip in general? Like, you know, a couple of guys, a couple of girls talking over the backyard fences to each other about, oh, did you hear about so-and-so do this or do that?
I think it weaves in and out of that category.
But it's presented before a much bigger audience.
Yeah, it's a little bit more dangerous.
Because I can put online something about somebody, it may be entirely false, and I may be doing it just entirely out of malice.
Yeah.
Entirely. But it goes to 1,000 people as opposed to my next-door neighbor I'm talking to across the fence.
I say keep it to yourself, man. Not you, but like the person that's throwing out the hatred. Like,
but you're right. You're absolutely right. They should keep it to themselves, but they don't.
Yeah, they don't.
Right? And that's the problem.
But if it's directed towards you, what you have to do is like have it be no sweat off your back and just move along.
Well, that's
don't feed into it, because if you feed into it, you're going to entice that person.
And you reinforce that out of it.
Yeah, you're reinforcing their bad behavior.
See, that's what the internet culture has learned over time, though, because in the beginning that wasn't really the case. But as time has went on, the entire thing with internet culture is you got to be somewhat stern. Like, you got to be somewhat like strong somewhat.
Yeah. Which you could type a sentence and not be, but even if you are insulted, it's easier to just like type something like, okay, dude, that's cool. Thanks for your opinion.
Bailey then, just but it just shows that it's a different kind of culture.
So what if they have a fair criticism? But then I don't think it would equal what Sean is personally. Like, if they have a fair criticism and it's a little harsh, that's one thing. But if they're just like on their like, oh, like for instance, my videos, like, your video is ass.
Yeah, that's like, what I'm thinking. Like, just
okay. Like, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
And also, you know,
actually, what? Less offense to that.
I'm gonna add even more to that. It's like, on YouTube at least. I don't know about any other platform, but on YouTube, if people thumbs down your video or comment on it, leaving a shitty comment, doesn't matter. Because the algorithm just sees that as activity, and it's good for you regardless.
So that goes back to the old Hollywood expression: any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, fuck them, let them talk. And actually, Eddie was here the other day, and he said something really interesting. He's like, oh, "How does it feel?" Actually, yeah. He's like, "How does it feel that people are commenting on your videos and stuff? Like, there's so many comments." And I'm like, "Well." It's cool. I mean, it's funny. Like, for one, it gets old really fast. I don't even read them anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what was I talking about? Oh, yeah. So
delicious.
So he asks. Yeah. So I was saying that, yeah, they get into all these like moral weird, you know, like this, the one video about the girl that the abortion situation, right? People get into the morality of that, and it's like when they drop those, I don't want to put my points down.
No.
Because it's like, I don't really want to alienate anybody, and I know my points of view are not like, and I'm not pro-life.
You don't have all the answers either.
I have all the answers. Yeah, I do have all the answers.
No, I mean, like, for the video you do, but like, you're not trying to like pick a side
he's
of argument.
The platform,
you know what I mean?
Like,
you're not trying to encourage one side or the other. You're like, I just made the video about what happened.
Yeah, my views are established in the video.
Yeah, and
itself.
That's it.
But anyway, Eddie was like, "Yeah, the other. Don't worry about it. Don't type anything. The other people will do the arguing for you."
That's
and
true.
He's right.
Yeah,
because somebody that's pro-abortion.
Yeah,
or whatever it's called.
Pro-choice.
Pro-choice. Yeah, come.
Pro-life.
Pro-life is
pro-choice. Pro-life.
Yeah, so somebody that's pro-choice comes along and they tear them a new asshole and they say better than I would anyway. So
yeah, and you didn't have to say a goddamn word and point proven.
I feel like as someone who isn't capable of carrying a child to term, though, you don't necessarily have all the answers. I think you should maybe clarify. But
you're right. I can't have a child, but I by being pro-choice, I think I have enough answers to say that I would rather fight for the woman to decide if she wanted to have that child or not, and not have somebody else make that decision for her.
Bingo.
That's the only answer I need to find.
Because we'd like to think that each of us have our own private morality that we judge ourselves by.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the freedom. That's the freedom, and it's also the responsibility of the citizen.
Yeah.
Because citizenship is a responsibility. It's not just a privilege. It's a responsibility. So when a woman decides to have an abortion, I will accept that because
it's her body.
And it's her responsibility.
Yeah.
I won't dictate to her what she should do with her body.
Yeah.
But hopefully she has reached that decision on some moral basis.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't question that. I will just accept that decision.
Yeah.
And that's my pro-choice stance.
Yeah.
I almost think that, this is like a really fledgling idea, but if we were going to make it, I don't know if it actually is currently illegal, but if it's illegal for a woman who's conceived a child to, like, abort her unborn fetus, then it should potentially be illegal for her to consume alcoholic beverages or something that could at all, you know? Like, mm-hmm. If we're going to regulate one thing, why not regulate it all, you know?
Yeah.
Why should we? That's kind of my question. And we currently don't. We put up signs for like, hey, it's dangerous, but we don't necessarily say like, no wine whatsoever. We're going to handcuff you.
We'll do that, but we don't want to get into that.
Well, that's a discussion for perhaps an entire podcast.
Yeah.
And you could also bring in
it's 2 hours worth for
the
sure.
difference between what our founding fathers had in mind and what we do today.
Because
I think our founding fathers, personally, I think our founding fathers would shake their heads no about a law to wear seatbelts. It's our responsibility as citizens.
We use hemp rope, bro.
To wear seatbelts. It's a smart thing to do. But it shouldn't be dictated by the government. It's our freedom to choose what is the right thing to do. Yeah. If we choose not to wear seatbelts, and people have brought up to me, yes, there's an economic ramification of that. I understand that entirely. But the bottom line is my responsibility as a citizen, I fasten my seatbelt because it's a smart thing to do.
Yeah. You know
it's
what?
It's my responsibility as a citizen.
Can I say something really
that.
Fast?
Sure.
It's really quick. I feel like people buckle up now, not because they want to, but because most people have like smart cars or whatever. The thing doesn't stop dinging at you. So like out of annoyance, you buckle up.
You buckle up, right.
Like, I'm only going like 50 feet.
Not,
I'm fine.
It's but not you the know, government. It's the corporations.
Yeah,
it's
the corporations out cracking down
I
on you.
It should be. I feel like our government should force corporations but to isn't, put seatbelts in the cars for establishments.
Am I the only one, though? Like, is that you guys, too? Like, do you hear the bing, bing?
I barely have a seatbelt.
I know,
car,
but, like,
dude.
You've been in my car before. You're like, oh, what the hell's that noise?
Yeah, Bailey's car's like that, too. Yeah. It starts screaming.
You know what I mean?
Mike? Sit fully in your seat. Scoot back.
Yeah. Put foot on brake before putting in reverse. I'm like, all right.
That'd be a good leadway to doing that episode, maybe on freedom. It would connect with libertarianism too. Actually,
that's a good topic. It's a good topic.
Because libertarians took the political compass test again, and I was like pretty close to the bottom, slightly to the left.
That's like that's just straight
backwards
up anarchist
L.
areas.
What's that?
Like how down were you?
Pretty far.
Like over halfway down.
What's that?
Over
I'd
halfway
say,
down?
I'd say almost three quarters of the way.
So what does that mean?
That's like pretty much
are you an anarchist
straight up
or
hardcore libertarian.
Hardcore libertarian.
Well, no, the middle area. No, the middle area between the two boxes is pretty much like your straight up anarchist, who is like it could go either way.
So a Thomas Paine man.
Kind of.
I guess.
Thomas Paine, I think, would be more lib right, but I don't
probably
know.
Closer to the right. But that's just probably. I'm assuming because of the time.
Yeah.
But maybe in the modern day. We were talking about this last night that because the forefathers were, they came up with ideas that they did through reading and education. So if they were to be in this time and read the education and the literature now, they would act accordingly, which would probably be progressive if the science was, available. That's what I'm assuming, at least.
Right. That's actually a good topic for a super future podcast. Is
I think so too.
Right, personal liberties. Right.
Didn't you just do a course on that?
Yeah,
I think we should do a night talk on that. I think it's.
I'd be down for that.
Right.
What? So, final thoughts.
This way or this way?
You first. Around this way.
Final thoughts. Our thoughts tonight. I don't know. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it was a good episode.
I need Murat to Google something while the final thoughts keep going through. But you're Googling podcast associated with The Social Dilemma. You've probably heard of The Social Dilemma. It's a documentary about the ramifications of the internet. Yes, and Murat is reporting it's called Your Undivided Attention. And I suggest anyone who's made it to some hours through this podcast should also check out Your Undivided Attention's podcast, because it talks about the many optimistic aspects of the internet and the many directions we can take with it. And it, I feel like, really echoes a lot of the things we've been talking about this evening. And I'm excited for future conversations about the nature of freedom.
I got my own mic. Thank you, though. I don't know. This is a great topic, and I love doing this. I love whoever's listening. And happy birthday, Murat.
Thanks.
And this is really cool. And that was really cool. I didn't know about that. I'm going to go check those people out. I never heard of them before. Your Undivided Attention is a great name, just like Our Thoughts Tonight.
Our Thoughts Tonight, yeah.
Some dum dum do.
Once we get this fan base thing snowballing out, maybe in our third year now.
You should check the subscribes, man. All right, Ashok.
I don't got much to say. Technology bad, return to monkey, pretty much.
Return to monkey? Yeah. Return to form?
Yeah. Regression.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of our audience probably don't recall the controversy that came with the invention of the television, but a lot of it was the same. And social media does, like television, bring with it a mixed bag. Some might even consider that our just past president, Mr. Trump, again, a Mr. Trump, you might look on him as a poster child for all the questionable merits of social media, the way he abused it and used it. But while many poo-poo Mr. Trump's use of social media, one can't help thinking that if Ms. Clinton had made such flooding use of the internet to express her views during the last election and won that election, maybe many people's views of the internet might have changed. We don't know. As the old saw says, you can't have the dog without the dog poop. And that may be true of the internet. And see if you can find that online. So for all of us, I will wish you all a good night and thank you all for listening.
Our thoughts tonight.
Our thoughts tonight.
Our thoughts tonight.